for your listening pleasure, a Northwest native.
Bluest skies you've ever seen.
Showers throughout the night.
An outspoken observer, the sage of Seattle, Robert Bryan. With a sparkle in her eye, a ray of sunshine, a sunbeam from the Sunshine State.
Come on down to the Sunshine State.
Lil Hinkle, one of America's last unbiased, unslanted, untainted journalists.
This ends the press conference. Thanks, everyone.
Thomas Brock, each with their own take on world events.
You're a nasty person.
Sorry, sir. Doing my best.
The wacky.
Excuse me.
The weird.
Where did you find that?
Keep your voice down, please.
The wonderful.
There's been a response.
And news of the day.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber.
It's the Rob, Tom, and Lil Show. Good day, America.
Hey,
welcome
there.
To the Rob, Tom, and Lil Show. I'm Thomas Brock, one of the last unbiased, untainted journalists in the nation. Lil Hinkle is here.
Right here.
The ray of sunshine from the Sunshine State. Robert Bryan, the unorthodox, outspoken observer of the Northwest, out for this week, feeling a little under the weather, so we are going to have to get along without him. Hillary Clinton, once former President Donald Trump. Well, she portrayed him as a character who wants to kill and wants to imprison his opponents and exile journalists. The former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, said that if Donald Trump wins the upcoming 2024 election, he will go to violent extremes regarding both opponents and journalists. She was on the podcast Defending Democracy. Hillary Clinton speaking to host Mark Elias about Trump's behavior and remarks. Not exactly pleasant to say about former President Donald Trump.
You know, his bromance with Putin, and it was actually called that, I think, by the former Prime Minister of Australia, who said he saw Trump with Putin, and Trump was like, you know, just gaga over Putin, because Putin does what he would like to do, kill his opposition, imprison his opposition, drive, you know, journalists and others into exile, rule without any check or balance. That's what Trump really wants.
Yes, Trump really wants to kill people and imprison his opposition. And the irony is not lost on the fact that Mrs. Clinton's fellow Democrats have put Mr. Trump under four criminal indictments, four criminal trials, and one civil trial, including prosecutors Letitia James, Alvin Bragg, Fannie Willis, Jack Smith, all trying to put Mr. Trump behind bars just 7 months before the presidential election. Clinton's words continue as she speaks with Mark Elias.
He only sees strongmen leaders. He sees Putin. He sees Xi. He sees Kim Jong-un in North Korea. Those are the people he is modeling himself after. And we've been down this road in our, you know, world history. We sure don't want to go down that again.
Her words come as Representative Benny Thompson, a Democrat from Mississippi, has introduced the Denying Infinite Security and Government Resources Allocated Toward Convicted and Extremely Dishonorable Former Protectees Act. Well, that's a mouthful,
yes.
But if you put all of those words together, it comes up with the acronym DISGRACED. And what that act would do is remove Mr. Trump's Secret Service protection if he is convicted in any of these trials.
Now, here's the problem with all that. He's already been president for 4 years. He's never done any of that. And as far as I can remember, most presidents meet with all those different leaders. They just wind up being signed up to meet these leaders for different purposes, to maintain some sort of a relationship between our country and those other countries. So just because he's there doesn't mean that he's going to follow what they do. And I believe that his actions in the past are representative of what he'll be doing as he goes forward. This has nothing to do with what he's going to be doing going forward. And all this is a lot of fear-mongering.
And it's clear that Hillary still has an axe to grind 7 years after she surprisingly lost that election to Donald Trump. And I think if you remember, immediately after she lost that election, she was declaring Donald Trump an illegitimate president, and she still has those poor feelings.
Isn't that an election denier? Isn't there supposed to be some things happen if you're an election denier?
That's a very good point there, and that just comes around to roost when the Republicans are on the winning side mm-hmm. or the Democrats. And that's not the only problems that Democrats are dealing with right now. They are also dealing with inflation.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Mr. Biden calling it shrinkflation.
It's more like Bidenomics biting us. The same $100 grocery bill that we had in 2019, those same groceries today would cost you about $140 now. And so that's pretty crippling. That means that people who are really trying to watch their budget, maybe they're buying those groceries and trying to figure out, okay, what can I really, really get away with not bringing home today?
And that's not something you just made up. That was in the Wall Street Journal analysis.
Yes. They do an analysis of what they say Nielsen IQ data of everyday food prices, and they're seeing that everything's going up. The biggest ones that they're seeing that they mentioned were eggs going up 63% and sports drinks going up considerably as well. Now, sports drinks, I think we can get along without them pretty nicely, but eggs, as far as a good protein source and good food source, those are important. Yeah, food prices overall, it's really hard. You've got to really trim your list to know that that's what you're going to come home with. Thankfully, if you're a smart shopper, you're looking around and comparing prices, maybe doing some coupon cutting. I know we've got some decent stores in our area that you can go to before you go to the bigger stores to find cheaper but less expensive but just as good products to bring home to your family.
Yeah, did you see that 74-year-old woman from Vermont,
yes.
Sharon Felton? She was quoted saying that when she goes shopping, it's kind of like foraging during an apocalypse. But she says chicken is always on sale somewhere.
Somewhere.
So she's got to find it, though.
Well, one of the things I hear them talking about from time to time is people who are shopping in Walmart because they can't afford to go to, like, Fred Meyer or Safeway or one of the other big grocery stores because they're just too expensive. So you wind up going to Walmart or one of the other box stores that are considerably less expensive, and to make your dollar go further.
But this administration continues to deny that it's even an issue. Mr. Biden saying inflation is actually lower than it's ever been, and his Treasury Secretary Yeltsin saying that inflation is lower. We were surprised that it was more than transitory, but Mr. Biden actually blaming it on shrinkflation, packages are smaller, but you're paying the same amount.
It's more of what this administration does. If you keep saying the same thing long enough, people will buy what you're saying.
He also blamed oil companies for trying to gouge us.
Yeah. It's just more of the same. If you say the same thing, if you keep, or even, okay, getting away from that, but January 6th, calling it an insurrection. It was not an insurrection. You want to see a real insurrection? Check out Haiti. That's an insurrection.
Yeah.
But you say the same word often enough, people are going to start repeating it. And that's what they've done. They've put that in there, and they've got the public saying the same thing. And it's been very intentional.
But groceries are not the only things that are affecting us. Looks like we're also going to be paying more at the postage.
Postage is going up again. It just seems like, I remember, so what's the cheapest you remember a stamp being when you were a kid?
Oh, you are really dating us. I can remember postcards having a nickel stamp.
Yeah, I mean, really, really inexpensive. But stamps are going to go up to 73 cents in July. Currently, they're 68 cents.
Another 5 cents for the government.
At least.
But who even uses mail these days?
That's one of the big things that's going on is the post office has a reported net loss of $6.5 billion because so few people are using mail now.
That's part of the problem. There's UPS and FedEx and everybody.
Or not even that. We're doing so many things. Email. Email's a huge thing.
Payment
or
by
text.
Direct payment from your account.
So the whole paper thing, sending things through what they used to call snail mail, just ain't happening like it used to.
But this is the thing. This is the sixth price increase on stamps since 2020.
Well, and they're also saying
coincidentally happened to be a year before Biden took office.
Yeah, and well, the other thing is they're saying that this is a decade-long restructuring process that was announced in 21, and they're expecting more projected losses of up to $160
billion,
by 2030. So this isn't – they're saying this is stability. I have a hard time calling that stability. But
and they lost $6.5 billion in 1 year.
Yes.
In 2023.
Yeah, just last year.
I'm an old man. I got to remember the 1900s. But there's more economic news I want to tell you about, too. Best Buy laying off hundreds of employees from their Geek Squad tech support units. You've probably seen the Geek Squad cars driving around, the crew members who go
the
to
cool
locations
vehicles.
And work on their tech, products. Geek Squad members instructed this week to work from home and wait for a phone call from their superiors, which doesn't all sound all that bad until the phone call came, and then they were notified by both email and on the phone that they were losing their jobs.
That's just cold.
It's a terrible way to be terminated. Our leadership gave individual calls stating we were being let go, they said, for the simple fact that the company couldn't afford to pay us more or less. Extremely short notice and devastating, said one employee. So it is, this follows a pattern because last year Best Buy laid off hundreds of employees at its retail stores. And they are planning to close an additional 15 stores.
And I'm sure if you follow this back, this goes right back to Bidenomics.
Tough situation for the American public, for all of those who have to put groceries on the table and bring home a paycheck. Coming up, there's a model of the USS Enterprise that has resurfaced. Beam me up, Scotty. I'll tell you about it next.
Refresh your mind, not just your nasal passage, with Barrage.
Barrage.
Our uniquely designed device directs a steady, high-pressure stream of thought-cleansing water in one ear and out the other, penetrating your cranium to erase those hard-to-forget images, thoughts, and sounds. Like that awkward moment when an elderly family member answered the door in his underwear. Perfect for removing bad movie dialogue forever etched in your memory banks for eons to come.
How we doing, baby?
I gotta go pee.
Useful for erasing infuriating, moronic, and dishonest claims from political leaders and biased news commentators.
Border is closed. The border is secure.
Generally, households are in very good financial shape.
We have dramatically reduced inflation.
We're down in crime in the subway system.
It's not Navaj, it's Barrage.
Barrage.
Barrage your brain with the cleansing action of refreshing memory-removing water with Barrage.
Barrage.
Take away those uncomfortable, irrelevant, unnecessary, unwanted thoughts that fill your mind with Barrage.
Barrage.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs. But it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is often laced into illicit drugs and used to make fake versions of prescription pills. You can't see it, taste it, or smell it. Suppliers mix fentanyl into their products because it's potent and cheap, and the dealer might not even know. Keep yourself and others safe by knowing the real deal on fentanyl. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Rob, Tom, and Lil Show. Really glad you're able to join us today. I'm Tom Brock, one of the last untainted journalists in America. We've got Lil Hinkle, our ray of sunshine from the Sunshine State. Robert Bryan out this week, not feeling well, so we wish him the best and hope he can make it back here.
Get better, Rob.
Real quick. The United States showing a little bit of military muscle this week with 12 nuclear-laden stealth bombers, vowing that the jets are ready to strike anywhere, anytime. Just try us. And among the Middle East tensions with Iran and Iraq going at it, The B-2 Spirit is a multi-role heavy bomber, and we rolled out 12 of them this week at the Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri in what they call an elephant walk. All 12 of these aircraft, it's an impressive sight. If you want to take a look on the internet, there's plenty of video of this.
It's pretty impressive.
Showing some military muscle, and the elephant walk is they're all cruising down the runway slowly, and then they all take off in succession, rapid succession, one by one.
Pretty cool.
The two-pilot jet has an unrefueled range of 6,000 miles, specifically built for intercontinental missions, and they're virtually invisible to radar. So that's American technology at its best. We have an entire fleet of 20 of them, but they just showed off 12 of them at Whiteman Air Force Base.
I'm sure that's more than enough.
An impressive show of force and sending a message out there.
These babies are expensive, too.
Don't mess with the U.S. of A. And those things, yeah, expensive, and that's a great transition to the moment that Representative Mike Waltz kind of had a tête-à-tête with U.S. Air Force Secretary Frank Kendall over the cost of a bag of insulator joints, also known as bushings, at a congressional hearing this week. The military leader questioned by Florida Congressman Mike Waltz held up a bag of bushings that are used in aircraft, a lot of different aircraft. They use those things to keep the vibration down in the wings and in the body of the aircraft. And he had a few questions for the Air Force Secretary about the cost that the Air Force is spending on these things.
Yeah, it's pretty radical.
Take a listen.
This, Mr. Secretary, is a bag of bushings. This bag of bushings, stamped out by machinists, don't need a high school diploma. It's not anything high tech about this. All of this bag is compliant with the FAA specifications.
So he's in front of this formal inquiry board, a congressional hearing, waving this plastic bag of bushings.
How much do you think the Air Force pays for this bag of bushings?
I don't know, Congressman.
$90,000.
Whoa!
Yeah,
this is a $90,000 bag of bushings that you need for any jet turbine engine just to operate. So the exorbitant cost due to DOD only buying commercial parts from the OEMs, which is essentially sole source, is literally driving us out of business. I mean, the interest on our debt alone is now exceeding, for the first time in American history, the entire defense budget. We can't afford it anymore.
You can imagine the backlash on the towards the military after this clip circulated on the internet. And reminds me to a time back, I think it was in the 1980s, when we were called attention to toilet seats.
I remember
purchased
that.
By the Air Force for something like $10,000 or something outrageous like that.
And this is totally obscene.
When you have one buyer and one seller, and neither one of them is using, the buyer's not really using their own money, and they don't care about the cost, and the seller puts a price tag on it that the taxpayer ends up footing.
What's really sad is that this hasn't changed.
Yeah.
That they're still decades. Doing this, and our military is having issues with all kinds of stuff. And this is one more thing to the American people that we just look and say, would you come on, get serious? This is wrong. This is wrong.
And I'm sure this is an exception to the rule, but imagine all of the other parts of the aircraft, and when you add up all of the overcosts and the exorbitant expenditures that they put a price tag on it, just, well, I think that one's worth, let's call it $35,000.
Just nuts.
For, the toilet seat. Yeah. But fortunately, the USS Enterprise never had bushings. Because that's back in the news this week as well.
Yes. So the original model that they had for the original Star Trek series, the Enterprise, went missing in the 70s, just shortly after one of the movies was put out. and nobody really knew where it went. I don't remember hearing anything about this, but I'm sure, you know, on the lot and offices, all of a sudden it was missing.
This is a good size model, too.
It's about 3 feet in size. It's a good size piece of Star Trek equipment.
Science fiction
lore. It really is.
Legendary.
Well, it popped up on eBay last fall, and a bunch of people, you know, were kind of talking to the owner, and he took it off. Got a hold of an auction house to have it authenticated, which I don't know what you did to do that, but that's what he did. And they
Spock's fingerprints on it.
At least Kirk's. Who knows? And Eugene Roddenberry, who is the son of Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, he's been contacted, and they sent it back to him, and he said, "This is not going on my shelves or my desk at home." He said he is of the belief, which I think is really nice, that this belongs out in the public, so all Star Trek fans can enjoy this.
Right, because Gene Roddenberry has been gone for 30 years.
Yeah, at least.
But there are Trekkies everywhere.
Oh, yeah, and what's really cool is it doesn't seem like any money transferred where, you know, went from one hand to another, which is really cool. They just wanted to get it back to the owner. Roddenberry made the comment that he was kind of feeling vindicated because he thought he was responsible for it having been destroyed. Apparently when he was a kid, he has some sketchy memories about it, but does remember tossing it into a pool, thinking that he destroyed it. So to actually have it back
imagine
now.
Imagine the guilt associated with having
a piece
of
vindicated. Everything's
lore.
Cool. And that he's putting it back out there for the fans
the
to enjoy. I think that's really cool.
Implications of that.
Yes.
Just incredible.
Yes.
Well, we have a story about a woman who called the police on herself when she was actually trying to turn in her drug dealer, but she didn't care that she actually was.
Apparently, she thought that the police would be quality control type of people for her. She got a hold of some meth that was not very good, did not get her the high that, or whatever it was she was chasing after.
And this woman is our weekly
derelict
degenerate
and dullards of the week.
It's time for derelicts, degenerates, and dullards in the news.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
I'm sure that's what they thought.
You are a rude, terrible person.
Hey, want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
I could have been a contender.
Okay, so Sarah Harris lives in Bedford, Indiana, called the cops. I guess she was hoping for some kind of quality control person to report to. Purchased some methamphetamine and did not give her the high or whatever she was looking for. And so she called the local police to complain about what she'd purchased. Rather stupid. They're kind of fulfills the whole derelict, degenerate, and dullard thing. Well, she wound up being arrested. And, of course, she pointed them to her. I'm sure she reached out and tried to point them to her supplier. But she was willing to say something with this as long as there'd be no retribution, but she did wind up going to jail. But just the idea that she would purchase the drugs, call the cops on herself like this, hoping to complain about the dealer, is pretty impressive.
And I suppose they did go after the dealer, but she also got in a bit of trouble herself.
Yep, it's just what happens. You do stupid things like this.
This is Indiana police.
And this isn't her first...
She thought she was having a heart attack when she took the drug.
And this isn't her first dance with the police either. She's been convicted of theft, meth possession, criminal mischief, disorderly conduct, resisting, operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated. So it's not her first, you know...
And because she was so candid and so honest, the judge that she will face will have the pleasure of possibly sentencing her to up to 30 months in prison. Wonderful. Wow.
So 30 months, that's like 2.5 years.
I suppose she thought that was worth it just to turn in this guy, to be a snitch on this.
She'll probably get off.
Because he could kill people with whatever he's dealing out there.
Yeah.
Not a good thing.
No.
Does Major League Baseball have enough minorities in it? I'm going to tell you about that right after this break. Some people say no.
Skip the Trip. We are a combination fitness center and emergency room trauma facility for that unforeseen mishap. We've got treadmills, stairmasters, free weights, as well as gurneys, operating tables, bandages, and tourniquets. Just in case your workout doesn't work out. Why wait for the medics and ambulance to show up when you turn an ankle, pull a tendon, or throw out your back? Avoid paying those costly ambulance bills with a one-stop-shop approach to getting fit. With state-of-the-art weight resistance equipment and trauma-level physicians and emergency personnel at Workout Passout. When your ticker stops ticking or you suffer a massive coronary, pull a muscle, or turn an ankle. No need to wait. With our complimentary wheelchair attendants, we will transport you to our own built-in clinic and check you in. Some delays may be expected as we process your insurance information. Don't delay. Get the most out of your exercise routine with full medical attention from our professionals. Be sure to check out Workout Passout. Go to workoutpassout.com for a location near you.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
Welcome back to the Rob, Tom, and Lil Show. We've got Lil Henkel,
hey.
Sunshine from the Sunshine State. I'm Thomas Brock, your untainted journalist, one of the last remaining ones. Robert Bryan, not with us today, but he'll be back for our next episode. And
feel better, Rob.
Major League Baseball is now thinking that maybe not enough minorities, especially African-American black athletes.
Because...
Well, this really isn't anything new. Back in 2021, a sports historian and a professor by the name of Lewis Moore wrote about the decline of black players in the MLB and the league's so-called indifference to it. The number of black players in the MLB was relatively stable in the 70s and 80s, but then things kind of dried up for African Americans. Today, the number of African Americans in the MLB sits at an all-time low of roughly 7%.
That's pretty true. What was it back then?
More than that. I don't have the exact figure. But Jahan Jones just wrote an article about this saying that really if MLB wants to get more blacks back into baseball, it needs to make a massive investment in youth baseball. It needs to bring more administrators at the top levels of the MLB, decision makers, who are black into the fold, and they need to stop repeating, or the American public needs to stop repeating the same tired attitude that the game is not as cool as the NBA or the NFL, and that baseball is just a little more slow-paced. But it's an American tradition, and it's something that it is sad if it's true that the number of blacks are not in there.
However, the other thing too is it's, you know, if you go to a game, it's a whole lot less expensive to go to a baseball game most of the time than a football game.
Indeed.
I'm not sure about basketball.
And basketball, yes.
Okay, so that's another really expensive game to attend. So I don't understand the disconnect, because it's just, I mean, all right, I've been to a few Mariners games and they're fun. They're fun. It is a slower game than the other two. It doesn't have quite the excitement, but it's still a really good game. It still showcases some really good talent and agility.
And as I said, this is a historic trend that's just recently been called to light, because back in 2004, it was reported that only 4.8% of college NCAA baseball players were black. And up to the year 2000, only 3% of youth leagues, Little League, talking about Pony League, Little League, were comprised of black kids. As in contrast, look at the number of Latinos in the MLB, and it is overwhelming.
It's true.
There's more than 30% of the players from the Dominican Republic and Mexico and other Spanish-speaking areas, 30.2%. There was some reaction to those who say this is not really a problem for Major League Baseball. It's just a trend that all of America is suffering from. In fact, one high school junior in Anaheim at Servite High School, Miles Scott, said that everybody wants to play basketball and football because those are what he calls the two big dog sports, and baseball not quite as popular. It appears that baseball is not leaving blacks, but blacks are leaving baseball, and it is not really a league problem. It makes it hard. That's why it's so hard for MLB leagues and teams to sign black players when the pool of black players is not there. It keeps on shrinking for those who want to play baseball. And also saw this in the news that Florida recently passed the Individual Freedom Act, which wants to keep DEI and critical race theory out of public schools, signed into law by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in April of last year. It's regulating that workplace training and educational instruction related to race and gender, including a ban on teaching people, teaching that people are privileged or oppressed because of their race or their color or their sex or national origin, would be prohibited. And but now the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals has struck the law down, which means that law is being put on hold as the appeal processes continue.
All that does is it cause more separation and division.
That is for sure. I mean, if you're telling white students that it's your fault that the blacks or other minorities have been held back, and it penalizes certain racial person based on their racial characteristics. The court's recent opinion was in Honeyfund.com Incorporated versus the governor of the state of Florida, went on to say that this bill actually penalizes people from not using their First Amendment rights because they're not able to teach what they want or speak the way they want in public schools, so it penalizes certain viewpoints. There have been historical racial disparities in policing, police racism in more than 100 police departments in nearly every state, and they footnote that with a study that shows that since 2009, and that the pervasiveness of white supremacists within law enforcement is something that we can't afford to go back to. However, the governor of Florida says it's really not right to have tax dollars be spent on teaching kids to hate our country or to hate each other. And he says that, you know, we've got a responsibility to ensure that parents have the means to vindicate their rights when enforcing state standards and to protect workers against a hostile work environment. And the senior fellow and director of the Initiative on Critical Race Theory at the Manhattan Institute, Chris Rufo, says it's one thing to have critical race theories in universities and in the federal bureaucracy, but once you start putting it in the K-12 public schools, then that's doing something the government should not do, stepping between.
It shouldn't even be, it shouldn't be anywhere.
And the child.
That shouldn't be anywhere. It just, like I said, it just creates more division. And if we're already doing that in the colleges, which is creating a maelstrom of stuff, imagine what it's going to do if we start teaching that in the lower grades, just, you know, public school. That's just insane.
Nothing but rancor and division between people. And imagine that in little kids. I mean,
no.
Hate your neighbor.
Well, we're trying so hard to teach them to be kind to each other. Now we're going to teach them that, no, you're white. So
I understand the historical viewpoint of slavery and the history.
Yeah.
There's no reason you have to not talk about that. But we're moving forward
into a
different direction. On a lighter note, we have a dog hero to talk about.
We're going to the dogs.
We're going to the dogs, but this dog is not a doggone dog. Dog is a doggone hero.
It's a really good feel-good story. A family in
Rockville, Maryland.
Rockville, Maryland, dad's down on the first floor doing stuff. His wife's up on the second floor taking care of a grandchild. And all of a sudden, the dog starts banging with his paws on a door. And
maybe he was hungry.
At any rate, they start smelling smoke. They get everybody out of the house. They never, now chances are he's saying the dog saw the smoke. I'm betting the dog smelled the smoke.
Right. They got good sniffers.
Way before anybody sees anything. And everybody got out of the house.
Maybe it just
has
a sixth sense.
I think if we put a few more sixes and zeros in that accounts for the number of little neurological smeller things in their noses, just their ability to smell.
Technical science term.
Oh yeah. Oh, now it is. But the cost of the house, the damage was more than $200,000. But lives were saved by this loving dog, who is now loved even more because of her quick thinking and saving the family.
Do we know the dog's name?
Molly. Oh. This is Molly, the Labrador. And Labradors are just so sweet. They're such sweet animals. They're one of the popular ones. They're always at the top of the list of popular dogs.
This dog was actually trained to be a guide dog.
Oh, I know, and failed. That's.
But now he's succeeding in life.
So failed as a guide dog, but
for
but,
blind people.
Yeah, but that sniffer, man, can't match that.
Well,
can't
maybe his nose is far superior to his eyes.
Well, to his abilities to lead people around. So
coincidentally, we have another story about
another
animal
Molly.
Named Molly, another animal. And this one's not a dog. This one is one that has wings. Molly the magpie is back home in Australia with its family. Molly the magpie, a family adopted it back in 2020 as a baby. Because it was rescued. Aww. It was rescued and probably abandoned by its mom or was injured or something. But the family took it in and were just having a great time with Molly throughout the years until the Queensland Department of Science, Environment, and Innovation found out about it. Decided, no, you can't have that kind of pet. You can't have that kind of fun, affection, or companionship with a bird because it's a wild bird and you don't have a permit for that. So we are going to take your bird, we're seizing your bird, confiscating it, putting it in a cage, and just not going to have it because you don't have the right permits. This happened in Gold Coast, Queensland. Molly was separated from the family for 45 days. The beloved magpie. And if you look at the pictures of it on the internet, it is really a beautiful bird. It's got black and white feathers.
And apparently they've done a series of YouTube videos. It's a very popular series of videos on YouTube. They've done a book on this bird and just a kid's book or something. And so it's
a famous bird.
It's actually a male.
A male?
They thought it was a female. Until
good golly, Miss Molly.
And the Molly just stayed as the name. But Molly's been very popular, and people are just so excited to see Molly back. And what gets me is that this couple, this family's had this bird for 4 years. They got the bird in 2020, found the bird in 2020, and obviously the bird is thriving. Everybody can see that online on the videos, and yet
it was taken away, there was nationwide outrage in Australia. And even in the premier of Queensland personally intervened in the case to get the family back their beloved Molly. And so the reunion video is online if you want to go check it out. Although there were certain restrictions on the family getting Molly back, they could no longer profit from the bird or its image. So no more books.
Oh, come on.
No, whatever happened to good old Australian entrepreneurship,
yeah.
Man?
It's capitalism.
It's just not right. It's turning into a socialist country.
I love what one of the owners said. He's singing and barking and sunning himself with the dogs.
Yeah, the bird barks like a dog, and it kind of sounds like this. That's Molly, and this is taking the day of the reunion, the happy reunion with Molly the magpie.
Obviously, this bird meant a lot to them because they actually had to take some training to be able to care for this bird properly. When all this, I mean, for 4 years, they've been taking care of this bird and were made to take this training to make sure they were doing this an adequate job. I'm thinking, look at the videos.
And they posted online gushingly saying, "We have the best news. Molly is home. We are overwhelmed with emotion right now." And I think Molly was overwhelmed too. Oh, and they have two dogs that were overwhelmed. The two dogs named Peggy and Ruby were like best buds with Molly, because you could look at the video and you could see the dogs were as happy as the family to get the magpie back home.
Yep.
So we are all very happy for the magpie family reunion in Australia.
And they even got a license to properly, or a permit to properly.
Are there things that you did in the 1970s that your kids would either scoff at or not even recognize as a thing? Well, we're going to talk about a few of those things. Also, you can get college credit for Taylor Swift now. More on that just ahead.
Sick of smelly scent from sidewalk stool on soles of your shoes? Loafers landing in loathsome landmines leave you in a lurch? Fragrant funk fouling your favorite footwear?
No!
You need No Hidden Feces. You'll wonder how you ever lived without this one-of-a-kind device, a technological miracle in a world filled with the heedless homeless.
I used No Hidden Feces, and my feet are feces-free.
No Hidden Feces. The patented device scans the sidewalk ahead, identifies potential piles, and sounds an alarm when you're in doo-doo danger. It's a godsend.
We never take walks without it.
No Hidden Feces. No more worries when strolling the precarious pavement. No Hidden Feces. Keep your feet feces free with No Hidden Feces.
Go to nofeces.com and order yours today.
Substance use disorder and addiction is so isolating. And so, as a Black woman in recovery, hope must be loud. It grows louder when you ask for help and you're vulnerable. It is the thread that lets you know that no matter what happens, you will be okay.
When we learn the power of hope, recovery is possible. Find out how at startwithhope.com. Brought to you by the National Council for Mental Wellbeing, Shatterproof, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Rob, Tom, and Lil Show. I'm Thomas Brock. I'm here with Lil Hinkle. Robert
hey.
Bryan has the night off, and we are just reminiscing back to our childhood in the 1970s.
Those were the days.
Things were a lot different back then.
Yeah, today everybody's got a cell phone in their pockets. How did you when you were growing up, where was the phone?
The phone.
On the wall.
Well, we had, the rotary dial telephone. Or the princess phone in the 80s.
And I think the standing joke now is to put a kid in a room with a rotary phone and tell him to figure out how to use it, right?
We had one on the wall in the kitchen with the little
with
hook.
The long cord so that you could go into the closet or the bathroom or something and talk quietly.
Right? Oh, you're bringing back the memories. People at home under the age of 40 are going, what are they talking about?
Yeah, 60s, 70s, 80s. I mean, all this stuff was going on that kids today have no clue about. And
we didn't even have microwave ovens back then.
Oh, no. None of the stuff that we have today. So little of it. A payphone. Would kids today know what to do with a payphone?
I think there's one or two of them out there somewhere they might have seen.
Okay. I think there are some payphones that are no longer rotary. I think they're all push button now, aren't they?
Sure, yeah.
So they've got that much going for them, perhaps. Cigarette smoking used to be huge. It was upwards of 42%, and now it's down to 12% at least, maybe 13%.
But it's not just the number of people smoking, but where you could smoke.
Well, but the other thing I wanted to comment on is, for some reason, I think it's a lot more than that, because I see a lot more people smoking than I would think.
They're vaping.
Vaping has become huge, and apparently that's really more harmful to yourself, to your body, than smoking is. But yeah, smoking, I don't remember seeing this in my high school, but they were talking about how even in, you know, even in high schools you could smoke, but you could smoke on a bus, a plane, a movie theater, restaurants, classrooms, even in a hospital. I can't, you know, I mean, you're thinking, think about this. You've got oxygen coming out of, I mean, flammable stuff in the hospital. Well,
definitely in the bars when I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
You'd come home smelling like a tobacco factory or a bowling alley.
Most bars won't even let you smoke in them anymore, really.
When I was in junior high school, there was Smokers Row across the street from the middle school, junior, they called it junior high back then, where all of the students ages 13, 14, and 15 years old were smoking their Marlboros before school and after school. And there were probably, you know, 40 people out there smoking.
I honestly,
all kids.
Yeah. My high school went from kindergarten through 12th grade. We were out in the boonies in upstate New York. And don't remember, smoking was totally out of the picture. You couldn't have cigarettes at all on campus. So totally, I guess you and I are about the same age, but totally different experience regarding all that.
Other items from the 70s, a record player. Joe Biden likes record players.
Yeah, obviously. Weird. Yeah,
he tells you to go home and talk to your kids and play the record player.
How about, did you have parachute pants?
Parachute, like MC Hammer pants?
Huh?
MC Hammer pants?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have a pair of
Can't touch this.
Yes. And some of the stylings, remember the women's clothing?
That was 1990s, wasn't it?
It was getting started back then.
80s, 90s.
Yeah.
What about Thomas Guides?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah. Or, no, not even just that. How about the fold-out maps?
Oh, yeah, of course. In the
big, you could never get back to the size that it originally was when you took it off the shelf.
Used to use those in the big 1970s sedan on vacation time.
Yeah,
I saw the statistic. There are only 100,000 payphones across the country right now, where there in 1999 there were 2 million.
That's crazy.
So that, what is that, 5% of what they have?
And it used to be, I mean, you and I remember, it was like a dime to make a phone call from a payphone.
Right. The article we're quoting here says it was, you put 2 quarters in, but whoever wrote this is obviously younger than we were.
Well, I think it's now 2 quarters. You can start with 50 cents. But back then, it was a dime. And then I remember going up to, was it 20 cents or did it go right to a quarter?
I think it went to 15 for a while.
Did it?
Yeah.
I remember that.
From 15 to a quarter,
it seems
like.
Yeah, but at a dime, if you didn't have a dime, you could ask somebody for a dime to call home to ask for a ride or something. People would help, you know?
Right.
Today, if you needed help with a phone, you know, there are some nice people out there who might let you borrow their phone, but they're probably far and few between.
I see that you wrote out, you've compiled a list of other things.
Oh, yeah.
Like Walkmans.
Yeah. Remember the Cabbage Patch dolls?
Rubik's Cube.
Yeah. Oh, here's one. MTV. No, that's still out there, but
it's,
do you remember
there,
Max Headroom?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Max Headroom. He did Coke commercials, I think. And Nancy Reagan with her Just Say No to Drugs campaign.
Yep.
And putting
shoulder
together
pads for women. I mean, the shoulders were out to here in styling. So.
And making a demo tape on cassette.
Yep.
Or dance mix.
Yep.
On cassette. What's a cassette?
That's what they would be asking.
Well, something, as long as we're talking about entertainment, we're going to move on to a college course you can take, get college credit for, by learning the Taylor Swift business model, the billionaire pop star's business strategy being featured at UC Berkeley and his studies of how to build an empire, just like the jet-setting climate change activist pop star Taylor Swift. And it's not the only school that's offering it, but the course examines her failures and her struggle to get control of her master recordings. I'm sure that's not an issue that most of us are going to have to deal with, but there are legal issues involved and artist rights, ticketing legislation.
I remember little bits and pieces of that a couple of years ago. She was going through a little bit of that.
She's been having difficulty with fake tickets, counterfeit tickets being sold from her concerts, she and other artists. And so that's a big deal as well. But Berkeley is not the only place this is being offered.
No, there's a list.
There's a transgender Harvard professor that has a new course called Taylor Swift and Her World, which began in February. And then there are also courses offered on the Taylor Swift business model at Stanford, University of Florida, Arizona State, New York University, University of Texas, Austin, and at a university in Belgium as well. And Belgium's not too far from France, where Haitian descendants from former slaves in Haiti are suing France for reparations, just similar to the reparations movement here in the United States. They are saying that France should pay at least $150 billion with a B.
Oh, my Lord.
Dollars in reparations for Haiti, for its slavery and its aftermath. And they came up with figures like this because of they calculated it as $21 billion, but then there's 200 years of interest piled on top of that. So it's more like $150 to $200 billion, according to a BC
or more
professor, British Columbia professor, quoted by Reuters. So I can see their point somewhat, because the Haitian Revolution began in 1791. It lasted nearly 15 years, ending in 1804. And then a few years after they gained their independence on Haiti, France threatened to come back and invade the country again. And they said that France claimed that they were the ones that were owed money, because when Haiti revolted and had the revolution with their generals, that France had losses from the colonial plantations that they had been invested in, the slaves that they lost, and all of the income from the coffee plantations and other businesses that they had invested in. So they forced Haiti, pretty much extorted them, asking them to pay France money, and they had to make a payment of 150 million francs, French francs. I don't know how much that is.
That was a lot of money then.
Big time.
A lot of money.
It took them until 1947 to end up to finish making payments to France. What other country in the world has ever had to pay the country of which they declared war against and won for their independence? Only Haiti. Haiti has a history, a long and tragic history of poverty. And
they're still having problems.
You know, even more problems now. They essentially don't have a government. A guy named Barbecue is running a gang leader is running the place.
And then we're on to maybe an interesting topic, bread. So there's a city in Turkey. They did an excavation, an archaeological excavation, found this area in Turkey that they excavated. And in this area, this city that they discovered, they found a bakery, or at least an oven. And next to the oven was a bowl of what they finally determined was bread. So they've determined that this bread was around 8,600 years old. That's an old piece of bread.
How do they know that?
I guess they did some kind of time testing on it. I guess excavating, they found some other things that could determine that.
Carbon dating or whatever.
Can you carbon date bread? That's weird.
If it's burnt, it's got a little bit of carbon on it.
My biggest problem with this is the idea that, to me, if you leave a piece of food out and it's a piece of food that hasn't been, you know, full of all kinds of preservatives and stuff, if it doesn't go bad, it's not real food. So I'm thinking about this and thinking, how is this still here? I mean, because back then they didn't have preservatives and stuff. They're saying there was a light layer of clay that fell over everything that kept everything in the good condition it was in when they.
That's their version of the Ziploc bag.
Clay.
Well, how do they even know it's a piece of bread and not just a rock that's got porous holes in it?
Yeah, but this isn't even the oldest bread that they found. They, in another area in Jordan, they actually found flat bread. And the big difference is that this bread that they found was it raised through a process of fermentation, which they had no idea that they had back then. But they found bread that was even older than that, that was flatbread, that didn't have that going on.
So that led to the development of beer.
Yeah. And I think that's important.
Fermented barley thrown
actually,
in there.
Actually, beer came first and then the bread.
Oh.
Because, I mean, when you have a beer, you got to have a nosh, right?
That's a good way to do it. A little barley, a little hops thrown in.
Yeah.
Fermentation. Next thing you know, you got a six-pack. Well, I also saw this story this week. A homeless man in Los Angeles has built a house along a freeway, between a freeway and a canal. It's a pretty nice little place to live, it sounds like. He's got lights, a stove, a refrigerator.
All the comforts of home.
Even a well-maintained garden with several trimmed shrubs and stone arrangements. He's really up the neighborhood. And this is next to the 110 freeway near Highland Park, and it's right along the Arroyo Seco, which is a canal that's dry for parts of the year, but it does have water flowing through it sometimes. And so he's in an area where it's a homeless encampment. There's next to him, there are tarps and tents. But he's really taken his homeless living situation to the next level with all of these amenities that you would not expect to be there for a homeless person.
Yeah, because they require electricity.
The neighbors, not too keen on this gentleman. Connie Flanders lives nearby. She has a horse that she takes to a nearby pasture to take care of it there. Here's what Connie Flanders has to say.
This is really scary. I take an old horse over to the park to eat grass every once in a while, and I don't dare go after dark anymore. I don't go when I know there's not cars in the parking lot.
The Los Angeles mayor, Karen Bass, has also expressed concern, but there's 46,000 homeless people in Los Angeles. They can't take care
of
every single one of them. Here's another neighbor who has very little regard for this homeless man and his neighbors.
If they would have respect and like mind their own business and keep the areas clean, nobody would mind. But the fact is that they have no respect about what they're doing.
Another neighbor is a little more understanding of all the complex issues that are involved with the homeless community, the government, and how they can deal with it.
I guess if they've become more elaborate over time, that means people are planning to be there for a while. I hope the people that have the power to do something about it figure something out. I know that it's a complicated issue. Lots of politics and finances go into it.
So KABC, the local ABC affiliate in LA, has a reporter named Shayla Girardin. And she did a whole piece on it.
At least one house on the stretch even has modern amenities, like electricity, lights, and a garden.
And she was pretty impressed with the guy's setup. But again, Connie Flanders, not impressed.
I would like to see it cleaned up and kept cleaned up. But for this to be inundated with the mess that it is, it's not fair.
So a big mess. The Los Angeles government saying it's dealing with all those tens of thousands of people, but their outreach teams are urgently working to find housing for the individuals, especially those living in this encampment, and to also address the safety issues that are imposed, by this structure and its proximity to the Arroyo Seco Canal.
And so there are so many cities across our nation that are dealing with the same situation, the homelessness situation. And wherever they settle down, there's always this huge mess that accumulates. And I on the one hand, I get it because it's their belongings that they don't want to part with. But on the other hand, it doesn't stop there. They're always bringing more stuff in. And then the police come in, something happens, and they've got to do a sweep and get rid of everybody and everything they put out there. And it's clean for a short time. Then it all comes back again. This is a really hard problem no matter where you go.
Absolutely. And I'm sure there's a lot of garbage that you have to deal with. But one piece of garbage we found out that you might want to stick around with your house at your home is orange peels.
Orange peels. Okay, so we're coming up to summer where we're going to enjoy being out on a patio or a park, being outside. But we're not entirely thrilled with the little visitors that like to come along, like the mosquitoes, the flies, the different things. And they've actually found that orange peels make really good deterrents for mosquitoes. And it's just a matter of collecting them, and rather than throwing them out, putting them around the patio they don't like the smell. Apparently it affects their respiratory system, so they're actually choking to death.
Can you just rub it on your arms like repellent?
You can rub it on your arms, so it acts as a deterrent from being bitten. Helps that an awful lot. So, I mean, even Orkin claims that you can use just peels to repel insects as well. So
okay,
now, who
studies this stuff to determine that this actually happened, and how many different materials did they use before they came up with orange peels?
Well, think about this. Think about your citronella candle. Your citronella candle kind of has a citrusy fragrance to it, doesn't it?
Sure.
So this has been around. I think this information has been around for a long time. It's coming out right now because we're coming up to summer. So it's a good reminder for people that there are natural ways to repel the insects, which is really cool. And you can either leave them out there because they're biodegradable, so they're actually, you know, user-friendly that way. It's not going to be...
Who wants to see an old orange peel dry up over a period of several weeks? I mean, you're going to do that with banana peels, too, and watch them turn all black.
Actually, bananas are really good for your roses.
Oh, really? Okay, how did you know that?
My grandmother.
You're just chock full
of
old fruit information.
But I was kind of impressed with the other information. I hate spiders, and I didn't know this. So if I see that we're having a problem, I will definitely be putting out. What were they recommending?
I don't like
lavender oil and tea
snakes.
Tree oil keep spiders away, which is really cool. Cinnamon and chalk are natural ant deterrents. So that's pretty cool. Things I didn't know that I would use around a home to try to... I know that you can use eucalyptus at your doorways to keep fleas and other little buggers out.
You know what else eats insects? Big snakes.
You know, I'd rather handle a big snake that I know is not going to bite me than a spider.
The reason I bring that up is because our next story is about Burmese pythons in Florida.
Yeah.
They caught a whopper.
Well, they're not indigenous to Florida, and what's happened is
they're from Burma.
No, people had them, and they didn't want them after a while and set them loose. And now the Everglades, predominantly, there are other places as well, are teeming with these guys. And they caught one recently that was a pretty good size. He wasn't the biggest one.
So they brought in a few, and they've multiplied over the years?
Yes. People set them out, and they've just taken over the area. But this one, he weighed the most on record. He was... 177 pounds, which is...
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, it's bigger than people, a lot of people. But the heaviest python that they've caught was a 215, 17, and almost a half-foot female that they found that was turned in 2021.
217 and a half?
215-pound, 17 and a half-foot female.
Oh.
The longest snake... was 19 feet long and weighed 125 pounds. So she was a little bit thinner, watching her diet, I guess.
her diet of raccoons, bobcats, and rabbits.
I actually saw I think it was a reality series sort of thing or something going on TV a bunch of years ago. I remember seeing it, that there were these guys who go out and catch them because you can catch them and turn them in for cash. And so I don't know if this is still
I think I've seen those cable shows.
Yeah,
Monsters
cable show.
Of the Deep.
So if you catch one, a boa or any kind of a constrictor measuring at least 4 feet long, they're worth $50, with an additional $25 for each foot longer than that. So
now they call them Burmese pythons, but Burma doesn't exist anymore. I think it's Sri Lanka. So why don't they call them Sri Lanka?
You know, it's the name thing. They've been grandfathered in with that name.
Oh,
that's
okay.
All probably easier. And that's not the only thing. I was down in Key West a few years ago, and they have a huge problem. Not only Key West, but Southwest Florida has a huge problem, probably other parts of Florida as well, with iguanas. A couple were released into the wild. And so now you can go, you can, like the city of Cape Coral, probably Fort Myers too, because they're kind of sister cities, you can actually shoot them because they become such a nuisance. They destroy landscaping and all kinds of other things.
They don't eat people, though. Like
Pythons could eat
a child.
No, but, and these snakes, though, are eating, they've destroyed or cut back, I should say, the population significantly of raccoons, bobcats and even rabbits, they're not seeing as many as they used to.
Right, I saw that the raccoon population dropped 99%.
That's pretty significant.
In an 8-year period in the early 2000s, due to these giant monsters. I would not want to come across one. Now, iguanas don't bite people.
No, they're just a nuisance. They destroy habitats and landscaping, and they're a nuisance in other ways.
Having lived in Florida, you know a lot about this stuff.
I lived there for 25 years. I've been gone for about 20, went back a couple of years ago, and was finding out some things like, wow, it's pretty wild.
Well, that is going to do it for this edition of the Rob, Tom, and Lil Show.
On behalf
of Rob Bryan, who's not here, we hope he comes back soon. Lil Henkel, I'm Thomas Brock. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is honest, whatever is pure, lovely, and of good report, if there's anything of virtue and praiseworthy, think on these things, and the God of peace will be with you. On behalf of Robert, Lil, I'm Thomas. From the bottom of our hearts, thanks for listening.
Be blessed.